Okay, you got the thumbs up.
Okay, we're going.
Wow.
We're just going to get going on Graham Plattner, which is quite the story. It's always fun to be like interested in a political news story again, mm-hmm. because my soul and my brain is so deadened and rotting. I'm rotting from the inside, having to contend with what happens in national politics on a daily basis. You are, I know as well, going through the same thing. But this Plattner story is great. Horrible things he's accused of, should say. And we'll get into them. And maybe by the time this airs, he'll have dropped out. I hope he doesn't, because it's so much funnier for him to just not. This is Biden redux. You and I were the last people to get off the Titanic, because we were like, no, he's going to stick it out. Why shouldn't he?
Right.
Why shouldn't he?
They can't literally force him
to go. They can't force him.
And our Lady Macbeth, Dr. Jill Biden, does not want him to leave, you know?
Damn spot. Yeah.
The people who he listens to have a financial incentive for him to stay in the race.
Yes.
And, he, of course, his own pride. Yes. But no, it took the entire Democratic Party to force him off the ticket. And here, it seems like a similar situation of a,
the voters picked one person.
Yep.
Then Democrat leaders later decided we don't like that person. Nor are we going to pick the other person they had as a choice, right?
Right.
Why do all roads lead to someone other than Janet Mills and Graham Plattner when that was the choice before the voters?
Yeah.
That gets into some, how Democratic are they really? But
yes,
maybe
this,
we'll save that, but
Well, I mean, this is actually more, I think, more difficult for the main Democratic Party than the Biden situation,
right?
Because they did have a primary and Graham Plattner overwhelmingly won that.
Right.
So the voters in the state, at least up until these most recent accusations,
yes,
wanted him as their candidate.
Yeah.
They were actively enthused.
All right, let's go
him.
Over the accusations first.
Yes.
So this is an accusation of sexual assault by a woman, Jenny Rasico. So she was named, a little bit of interesting how the story came up. She was named in the big New York Times story about his history of whatever toxic behavior with women that mostly focused on Lindsay Fifield, who's a Republican activist, who said that, you know, she used to date him, and the worst incident was him like kind of grabbing her forcefully and trapping her in a room.
Yeah.
It wasn't still bad behavior, not an example of, it wasn't sexual. It was kind of dismissed by people who wanted to dismiss it, and of course, you know, shown as evidence that he's an abuser by people who were against him.
Mm-hmm.
But she, this other accuser, was mentioned in the story and said she dated him, and that alluded to something bad but didn't specify what it was.
Yeah.
Now she's specifying what it was.
And it's a very serious accusation.
Very serious. She says he was blackout drunk. She's in her home. She texts him, do not come over. Do not enter my house. He enters anyway and then just forces himself on her.
He rapes her is what her accusation is.
You know, for good measure, doesn't pull out or use protection, even though she's not on birth control. So she had to do a pregnancy test and such things. Kicked him out next morning. Maybe, I think, messaged him later to see if he had any remorse about it, and then cut off all contact with him. You know, he can say that never happened. I never went there. And there's no evidence one way or the other, but it's not a kind of accusation that's like, you know, one of those, well, who know, was it, did she withdraw consent? No, she did not get, she says she did not give him permission to even enter the house.
Yeah.
So that's pretty, if that happened, it's pretty unequivocal.
I
tend to believe at this point. Gut call.
Yeah.
I think he did it.
Sure. Yeah. I would describe it as certainly credible and believable. I mean, sexual assault allegations, particularly of a public figure, they're difficult because the nature of the crime means that absent the alleged, you know, the aggressor confessing, or I hate to be graphic, but some sort of physical injury, you're not going to have literal evidence.
Correct.
And so then what are the things that you can rely on instead? Would be maybe contemporaneous statements from the victim, right? This is obviously coming out a few years later. Or you can just go based on what you already know of the person who's being accused of the crime, the assault. And in both cases, I mean, we already have a long history of Graham Plattner being douchey to violent, right?
Right.
So that makes the accusation more credible. She, as to contemporaneous accusations, this one's a little, more of a gray area in that.
Yeah, I think she told her therapist years later.
And she also has some messages about someone who was considering dating Graham Plattner, and she described him as, consensually challenge or something like that.
Yeah, but it's funny, you know, some of our, I like Michael Tracy very much, but he was responding to that as that if that's evidence that she's saying it was consensual. No, she's saying, she's using a euphemism.
Right.
By saying, yeah, he's consensually challenged.
Right.
Like what she's meaning is that's a nice way of saying he doesn't obey consent.
Yeah. You have to do a pretty bad faith misreading of that statement to find it as anything other than
I mean, if you take the position that you're in the court of public opinion, unless there's overwhelming evidence that you're guilty of this thing, we should ignore it, then obviously this is not going to motivate you.
Yeah, and sure, but I think that's a pretty bad standard given the nature of sexual assault and the seriousness of sexual assault. Like, we're not on the jury, all right?
Yeah.
This is not a court of law.
Yeah.
This is deciding whether this person should have significant powers as a U.S. senator. Yeah. And
this is describing things that happened, by the way, four-ish, 5 years ago.
Not a long time ago.
When he was 18, mm-hmm. 30 years ago.
Right.
Not... You know, in which case, who remembers? And it's difficult to litigate that we ran into with, you know, with Brett Kavanaugh and even with Joe Biden himself. He was accused of full on sexual assault by a woman, Tara Reid, years and years and years ago. And, you know, what do you do with that when there's no additional evidence?
I find this credible and believable. And so does the vast majority of the country, because many Democrats, from political allies to people who were just, conveniently supporting his candidacy because they're Democrats, have all come out and said, "You got to drop out, man."
Except Cenk Uygur.
Yes,
he's out there being like, the Zionists win again if the legacy media, at the direction of the Jewish state, out to assassinate another working class hero just so they can kill more Palestinians.
Like, so that would be the other view. Yeah.
Okay.
It is funny to accuse the media of a vicious hatchet job when, in fact, this is their job to report on people's past bad behaviors if they're running for public office, right? So it's like, oh, the media did this. It's like, well, yeah.
they would never do this to someone who was, that's what literally these people are saying, that they would only ever do this to someone who has far left policy
which
ideas.
Is obviously not true, because we just went through a recent episode of this with Eric Swalwell, who I guess there's an interesting, I mean, if you want to do the factional taxonomy of Democrats, Graham Platner is the left-wing DSA type insurgent guy.
Yeah.
Eric Swalwell was the very liberal but still kind of establishment coded resistance lib, right? I'm going to have my pronouns in my bio. I'm going to wear the African scarf or whatever it is and kneel for George Floyd and then also funnel money to the defense industry and make sure you get your vaccine. But those are...
His pronouns are you up.
obviously, some serious accusations against him as well. Obviously, the media is... Journalists want a scoop, right?
Yeah.
They want to report dirt on candidates. And sure, obviously, many journalists are left-wing and like this guy. That's, I think, a reason why he came into a lot of prominence and why a lot of the initial accusations against him didn't hit. But they're still interested in reporting a scandal, right? So it's the idea that they would only do this to further their paymaster's bidding, I think, is a little too cynical.
It is really amazing to contemplate how they even ended up in this situation, because Graham Platner was basically handpicked to be the candidate by, man, my Michigan accent comes out when I have to discuss him. Graham Platner was handpicked, Jesus Christ, by Morris Katz and Rebecca Katz, who are not related to each other, but have some kind of far left activism, political organizing thing. He was a Zoran Mamdani ally. And they just said, they met him and they're like, wow, he's the guy. They talked to him for 5 seconds. They said, we talked to him for 5 seconds. He's the guy. Because he reads as working class to them. But this is the most important point I would make. He is in no way a representative of the working class, nor is the agenda he's running on attractive to the working class at all, demonstrably. Working class voters prefer Susan Collins. Working class voters prefer you know, not Daria Lisa Vila Chevalier, but the one she beat. Wealthy, highly educated left-wing people, not working class people. Maybe they prefer the agenda that he's running on.
Yeah.
But he is the the exact candidate of the ideology that we need someone who vibe codes as working class, but whose politics are DSA, are far left DSA. Because they literally think that that is their key to winning, that everyone is ready to vote for a form of socialism. Maybe we don't call it socialism, but a form of socialism. When the reverse is true, the working class voters are way, way more moderate on social and cultural issues. And then maybe they're lib to progressive on economic things. Certainly, you know, they like some economic ideas you and I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
They're not communists. And then they're actually conservative on social issues. That's not at all what Graham Platner and the DSA represent. They represent, you know, far left, confiscate money from the oligarchs, blah, blah, blah. And then maybe we just don't talk about social issues. But if you make us talk about them, yes, there's going to be trans women in sports teams.
Like, yeah.
It's what's going to happen. It's what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would describe, the class discussion has been interesting because though people might like to dispute this, America does not, in fact, have like a rigid caste system.
Mm.
So like, you know, if you go over to Europe, you know, you have...
Your dad's an oyster farmer, granddad's an oyster farmer, so right. You're an oyster farmer.
Or on the flip side, you know, your grandfather went to Eton, your father went to Eton, you went to Eton,
right.
And you were raised to
I wanna
be
eating some oysters from that oyster farm.
No, I would describe, if I had to describe his class and the class of people who support him, it's downwardly mobile, right?
Mm.
Because, you know, he does have something of a working class story that he can tell about his adult life. So his parents were, his father was an attorney, right? Mm. His grandfather wasn't like a political scion. And
I have no idea.
Okay, whatever. So his parents are wealthy, but then he's had a, I guess you could describe working class adult life of he was in the Marines and then he was a bartender here in D.C.
Fail son.
Yeah, a fail son of sorts, right? But maybe that gives you some sort of it gives you credibility to people who were raised by rich parents and then have struggled to replicate
right.
their success.
Because
right?
they have tons of debt from their stupid DEI study, grievance studies, graduate degree from Columbia
camp.
University.
Yeah.
The self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the DSA, you know, I know you and Jason talked about this, but they are doing, you know, they're having a moment right now, and they're being very successful in America's cities, and I think that's because it's in big cities where you can get the downwardly mobile, like, mm-hmm. you know, middle class libs, socialists, and the working class people, right? That's a coalition that actually exists in New York City, given the mayoral primary results here in D.C. It exists in D.C. as well.
Capitalism doesn't work if your goal is to go massively into debt, pursuing more and more graduate studies, degrees in things that don't translate to jobs, and then trying to find a job anyway. And if you, yes, capitalism does stand in the way of that being a successful career path for you, as it should, because we don't want that to be, that's not a good incentive, and we don't want people to do that. If you're doing it with your own money or your parents' money, that's fine. You shouldn't be going massively into debt to do that.
Yeah.
Yes, capitalism doesn't reward that. So if you did that and you hate capitalism, that's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Truly,
yeah.
Truly.
But these people are running for Congress now.
Right.
Great.
But yeah, well, and so this is the risk you run by wanting outsider populist candidates too, right?
Yes.
This has kind of been a victory for the consultant class. I mean, I guess Graham Platner, it's interesting because you say like he was handpicked by left-wing consultants.
But by weird consultants that hate the Democratic Party, hate the Democratic establishment, hate everyone else in the consultant class, think they have this one neat trick to win all the elections.
But he was also, the complicating factor is he was also overwhelmingly picked by Maine voters, right? Like Maine Democrats really like this guy.
Primary
right?
voters, yeah.
Yes, primary voters, sure.
Primary voters. What do we say about primary voters?
Well, you are more anti-primary
I'm becoming very against primary voters.
I think...
But they picked, so we got to let their choice stand. Which is why if this is a blow to democracy if they force him out of this. I want his name still on there.
Yeah.
And I want to see Susan Collins just blow him out of the water. Because really, if they force him off and pick someone else... It's probably to the advantage of Democrats because
at this point, yeah,
he's not going to win or unlikely to win. Could win. Anything could happen. they're going to find her a more credible opponent when all is said and done.
Yeah,
yeah. If you get to just ignore the will of the voters and just pick someone, that is a better system for winning elections, actually.
Yes and no. Because again, you know, the kind of smoke-filled room selection of candidates
I
can
be
also
in that room. I want to be smelling up that smoke.
I mean, that can also fail, right?
I mean, I wish we were in a smoke-filled room right now.
They don't let us smoke in here.
Fuck.
Yeah, I know. But that can also fail. I mean, I think you can look at Joe Biden's candidacy as having
that.
A lot of elements of old school party politics where the factions got together and say, hey, look, this guy's our best chance, right? And he won the primary, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't like there was an overwhelming number of party voters that were like, I am ride or die Joe Biden, right?
Yeah.
And then they, you know, smartly, the party also forced him out and replaced him. There's no way Kamala Harris was going to win that election, but it was the smart bet at the time. And they probably would have been better off had they actually opted to have like a last minute primary, right? And get someone.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they were doomed
by then.
They were doomed regardless, right? It's like Republicans in 2008.
There was no
right
choice at that
mm-hmm.
point.
Yeah,
at the point in which they realized they needed to switch out Biden, there was no correct option.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of Graham Platner's erstwhile defenders, right, have said, you know, they've been asked, after these last accusations, it's like, well, you've denied, you know, you've downplayed or all these other previous scandals, you know, about the Nazi tattoo, about mm-hmm. the accusations of physical violence towards partner, you know, his, you know, female partners, some of his comments on Reddit and sexting and whatever else, right? They say, so you downplayed all of this, you know, why? Why didn't that tell you something about his character? And their response is always, well, we don't want candidates who are grown in a vat, right? It's funny that this is actually like a common line they keep saying. So it's like, we don't want candidates who are pre-programmed. Let me use a phrase that's pre-programmed to make that point.
Yeah.
But we don't want candidates who are grown in a vat. And it's like, okay, fair enough. This guy was not grown in a vat. But the risk you run when you start grabbing people who don't have a long career in public life and then are poorly vetted is that
right.
they have a lot of skeletons
in
the closet.
No history of public service.
Yep. Yeah, this is why this is the benefit of having, there's problems with it again, but this is the benefit of having a kind of cursus honorum of you're a city council member, then you're a state legislator, and then you're a congressman, and then you run for the big office, right? Is that through that process of competitive electoral politics, mm-hmm. if you're a bad guy or you have bad things in your past, it should come out by people who are motivated to beat you
right.
in an electoral contest.
And there's just such a clear line between like, right, I get that, so squeaky clean because you've been preparing to run for Congress since you were 3 years old is indexing for sociopaths,
mm-hmm.
I guess,
yeah.
or people who have desired to rule your life
mm-hmm.
since they were very young and have lived in an unusually crisp and clean is a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But where I draw the line for adolescents. We should have a wider, I think, as a society, just more forgiveness, permission
mm-hmm.
structure
mm-hmm.
for fucking up before you turn 18.
Absolutely.
And, but this, again, his screw-ups were in recent memory.
Yeah.
And are violent assault.
Mm-hmm.
Not he tweeted something bad about women or
right.
gay people or black people. He's a rapist,
yeah.
allegedly, a full-on rapist. And the idea that these people have, you know, your Matt Stolers, your Ken Klippensteins, because who are apologizing just slightly that it turns out he's an alleged rapist,
mm-hmm.
but that they were directionally correct to seek someone exactly like that. I think if I was a member of the working class, I would be deeply offended
mm.
that they thought they could put up someone with hard left socialist economic views, also far left, to be clear, cultural and social views, but speaks to me because he's a fucking rapist.
Yeah.
Like that's
yeah.
what you think I'm
sure.
looking for. Like
yeah.
this is how, don't change anything about your ideology. Far left as possible, but also maybe he beats people with his fists.
Yeah.
I would be pretty gosh darn offended if that's what you thought of me
yeah,
as
kinda,
a member of the working
it's
class.
It's kind of rude, right? yeah. Well, and it speaks to the fact that anyone who's professionally involved in politics is almost by definition an elite who's out of touch,
yeah.
right? This was not some sort of organic candidacy, right? Even though he did generate a lot of organic support eventually.
Should deny his only path, by the way, if he wants to remain the candidate. He's already screwed up. You don't pause the campaign. You say these are relentless lies. I'll consider taking legal action. The Epstein class is out to get me. Israel's out to get me.
Yep.
If you fall for this, you're a sucker. Exactly what Jane Cougar is saying. Now, this is totally wrong, but this is what he should say if he was.
I mean, this is how Trump, through a mix of willingness to deny shamelessly every single accusation about him. And then also just the force of his own charisma. That is why he has succeeded at politics.
Trump goes to the people who are about to turn on him and says, "When I win anyway, if you've turned on me, I will have you destroyed." And then he follows through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then he follows through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. These are not good features of our politics. But should you want to be a successful politician while also being ridden by scandals, that's what you have to do.
Yeah.
In this day and age,
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but no, he picked the worst combination of responses to this, which is to describe the accusations as serious, and I'm taking them seriously, but I also completely deny them, and it's all false and lies. That's no, there's no constituency for that.
He should think about. I mean, I think it would be amusing if he doesn't drop out. I expect he will drop out. But you got to think, like, you drop out, he has no, he's not going to be a panelist on CNN. This humiliation, he will fade into nothing.
There is a possible.
The only path for redemption for him is actually to win.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to still be the candidate.
Yeah.
And it's not, it's an uphill battle, but it's not impossible.
No.
So he should stay in it for that reason, from his perspective.
And also,
for the good of common decency, from every other perspective, no. But from his narrow perspective, he should.
I guess this is also kind of a risk of picking nobodies with skeletons in their closet, right? Is like the opportunity cost. Like, they're not wedded to the system. They're not bought in or invested. And so there's no, hey, you need to drop out so that you can go and, so you can get your golden parachute and go off and be a consultant or be on the board of some nonprofits or whatever. He never had any of that. If he loses, he's back to the oyster farm, right? And being the harbor master of the small town or whatever, right? If he can still win that election.
Yeah. Storm blowing.
The sea is angry, my friends.
Generic kind of fantasy pirate character stuff.
But yeah, so his solutions right now are go back to his old life or potentially be a U.S. senator.
Yeah.
But go for broke, right?
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah, that would be, I guess that's my political advice to him. But okay, so let me ask you this question. So conservatives are having a great time right now because every single scandal they've said, this guy is bad, terrible news.
Airships are arising.
we'll get into Sea Captain impressions a little later. You wrote it on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. they've said that after every scandal, even though past ones have been less severe, right? Are they taking a little too much of a victory lap when they say, look, we clocked this guy from day one and said he was bad news, and you wouldn't believe it because you're power-hungry graspers?
Hmm.
Is that, do you think they're being a little too...
They're implying that if they had a bad guy, they would turn him out, which is obviously lies.
Untrue, yeah.
But they'll say, well, the difference between this situation and if there's a bad guy on our side is that if there's a bad guy on our side, he's not bad, and those are lies.
Yeah, right.
So in some ways, it just becomes a very simple bait. Like, we believe that your person's bad. We don't believe that our, like, they don't believe the things that are said about Trump. They don't believe that, Ken Paxton, whatever. It's deep state out to get him, even though it's other Republicans, whatever.
Yeah.
You just deny it on your side. And
yeah. Okay.
And some of the things people have been accused of, I am a big due process guy. I thought Me Too went too far. I've picked apart a lot of sexual misconduct accusations and situations in the past having to do with college campuses and some other things. So I don't know. Maybe there's somebody out there knocking me hurt for hypocrisy because I do frankly believe that he did this. But on some level, you just got to trust your gut.
Well, it would be silly if the principled position is to always believe the accusations or never believe them, right?
Like, but then the partisan,
exercise some judgment.
What most people do is the partisan thing, which is only believe them if they're against their enemies.
Yeah.
Which certainly some people are doing on the right.
Yeah, I guess I have a hard time parsing this because I've just always considered him a bad guy on policy alone.
Well, right. His policies are wrong.
And so even the slightest whiff of scandal, it's like, well, yeah, just get a better candidate who believes better things.
Yes.
Right?
Or who believes the same things but is not an alleged rapist.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So, which... Yeah.
Yeah, so we will see. He is thus far refusing to resign and I guess is making noises about he wants to be the one to pick the person to run in his stead.
This guy doesn't take no for an answer.
Very good. You know what actually made me kind of angry and perhaps irrationally so is the executive director of the main Democratic Party, who's like 24 years old, came out as like, you know, just really mad that the Platner team has been reaching out to us and is threatening the integrity of this process. It's like, integrity of what process? You and the executive committee getting together and be like, okay, what's the second string? Who can we get in here? Oh God, we just got to get Susan Collins out of here.
Right.
It's like, there's no honor here. Right.
We already did the process.
Yeah, right.
The process decided.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You are rewriting the rules here. Mm-hmm. Speaking of rewriting the rules, if we're ready to move on.
Yeah, sure.
I'm going to engage in some conspiracy theorizing.
Uh-oh.
I've met a conspiracy theory I do believe.
Okay.
Mitch McConnell, have you heard about all this?
He is in the hospital, allegedly.
Or dead.
You think he's literally dead?
I don't know. I think something suspicious is going on here.
Uh-huh,
very
why?
Much so.
Yeah,
well,
catch me up, because I know
so
he's
Mitch
been...
McConnell's in the hospital. We've not heard or seen from him in 3 weeks, but and his wife, Elaine Chao, is in China. She's out of town. So the conspiracy theory is, and I'll tell you why I find it plausible in a moment, but the conspiracy theory is that he's dead or brain dead. He's gone. But they can't, there's no one to like pull the plug on him or attest to the fact that he's dead because his wife's in China.
I see.
And this matters because if there would be a need for a replacement senator before August 3rd, there would be a special election held. They would call for a special election. This is a state where the governor doesn't just pick a temporary replacement.
Mm-hmm.
They changed that because the governor is currently a Democrat, so they just changed it so that a Democrat couldn't make the replacement. There'd be a special election in which basically anyone could run. Thomas Massey could run for fun.
Ooh.
Wouldn't that be hilarious?
I love that. And then he wins? Yeah.
If the consequence of them forcing him out, like totally unnecessarily picking this fight with him, is that he got to be a senator for a couple months. That would be amazing.
Would there be a primary?
No. This is a special election.
Uh-huh.
He'd run as an independent. Anyone could do anything. It's a special election.
Mm-hmm.
But if this doesn't happen until after August 3rd, then it's too close in time to the regular election. So there'd just be no second senator from Kentucky until there's already a Republican won the primary, Democrat won their primary. They're facing off
in
November.
Yeah.
Like that's what's going to happen. And the winner of that one will take over in January no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if it's before August 3rd that suddenly there's only one senator from Kentucky, there will be a special election held to temporarily fill that seat. Thomas Massey could do a lot of damage in just a couple months. It would be hilarious. So
yeah, you can shut down the government.
So they just have to pretend Mitch McConnell is still very well for a couple more weeks.
Yeah.
And what has not filled me with confidence,
if he dies, then they will have no candidate at all, right?
No. If it's after August 3rd, well, there'll be no senator. Yes. So they'll be down a senator, but they don't want Thomas Massey. They'd rather have no senator than Thomas Massey. He's going to he's justifiably vengeful at this point, right?
Yeah, sure.
Or they just try to pretend McConnell's fine the whole time. But if they get found out after August 3rd, there's not going to be a special election. If they get found out before that, there'll be a special election. This is what I did. I did a monologue on this for us yesterday. So, you know, John Thune said, oh, no, he's fine. I talked to him all about you. He knows so many things. You wouldn't believe it.
Well,
a couple people, Republican people, all put out statements yesterday.
Right, yeah, I did see this. Yeah.
Where they all say variations of the same thing. Every now and then, the talking points go out from someone.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you see a lot of commentary on the same subject.
Mm-hmm.
it was very eerie to be like, I spoke to him for 20 minutes about XYZ subject. Like, several people shared barely rewritten
So there is some damage control being done behind. Yeah. There's some attempts to manage the public perception of this pretty explicitly. Yes.
So this, I can easily, I'll say mea culpa, he's fine. When he appears on camera and we can like carbon date it to now, and then I'll know he's fine. But other than that,
why do you find he's in bad shape? So already he's had a number of health episodes
I've seen him in public. Yeah, he's collapsed. He's just frozen. He is not well at all.
In any, yeah, obviously, you know, you could have a personal sympathy for him, but in any reasonable political system, already he would have been retired and replaced.
The wife ran off to China, and some people, Marjorie Taylor Greene was saying she thinks that Elaine Chao is a Chinese spy, which that's not necessary for this conspiracy to be the case, and maybe cuts against it a little bit, so I don't know about that. But
that would be remarkable if so, both because of her relationship with Mitch McConnell and the fact that she has been a cabinet secretary in two Republican administrations now. Yeah,
and he's not really like pro-China, so it doesn't...
Yeah.
I don't know about that part. But is he alive?
Okay, so why do you find this stuff
credible?
I think
they would absolutely go to these lengths to stop Thomas Massey from... they already went to outrageous lengths to get rid of Thomas Massey.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, okay. So let me push back on that if I can.
Yes.
Not having followed this too closely.
Yeah, good.
So they went to...
I want the uneducated perspective.
Yeah.
We're on a podcast. Just vibe.
Hell yeah. So they went to great lengths to replace Thomas Massey with another Republican who's going to be in Congress, right?
Yeah.
Safe Republican district. It would seem crazy to me that you would just sacrifice a Senate seat, right? That you would rather have a Democrat than Thomas Massey, honestly.
No. They're going to have no one. No, it's not a Democrat. It's no one.
But there will still be an election if he dies before November. He's up for re-election.
He's not running for re-election.
Oh.
No. He's out. He's done.
Okay.
In November, there will be election held between a Democrat and a Republican. This is already set.
Okay, I see.
The Republican who is succeeding Mitch McConnell is running in November, will probably win because it's Kentucky.
I see.
Come January, whatever, there will be a new Republican senator sworn in for Kentucky, unless if the Democrat somehow wins that election, it'd have to be pretty bad. But we're talking about in the interim.
Okay,
there will be
someone
temporarily taking over, and that's either Mitch McConnell, or no one, or the winner of a special election.
The winner of a special election
up until August 3rd.
I understand. Then I guess that would make sense. I mean, he couldn't literally be dead. They would have to, there would be a death certificate.
There's no one. I think it's like a pull the plug situation.
You think he's brain dead?
That's what Laura Loomer says. And, you know, she's never wrong, except most of the time. It was first crazy right wing people were the ones the other day saying, we hear rumors that Graham Plattner is about to get hit with something.
And that turned out to be true.
And it turned out to be true.
Yeah, I was very skeptical of that. It turned out to be true.
I was too. Laura Loomer is often wrong, but every now and then it does have some insight. So
yeah, I mean, say what you will about Laura Loomer.
She also said her like tweet after that was, who is Mark Kelly partying with? That's the astronaut senator from Arizona. What happened to your wife, Gabby Giffords? And the woman in the picture is literally Gabby Giffords. So
yeah, well, that's ridiculous.
Let's not give dear Laura. We don't want to get loomered.
Yeah, sure. That being said, she is, of course, incredibly plugged in to Republican Party politics now. So crazy people can still, in fact, have insights. Yeah, sure.
We just need Turtle to come out of his shell. Just poke his head out of his shell.
Yeah, that will be, I mean, it's an end of an era. That is the last remnant of old school Republicans,
and
right?
And by the way, Mitch McConnell would want it this way.
Yeah.
He would want to go to his grave denying some insurgent outsider the thwarting on pure procedural grounds the success of some outsidery insurgent type person in absolute ironclad defense of the party. That is... that would, you know, put a smile on his corpse in that hospital room, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's who he is. He's an institutionalist. So.
Right, totally.
So he would approve of this plan if he was able to give his consent.
That's probably in his DNR,
yes,
right?
Yes,
make
do
sure,
not,
yeah.
Well, don't unplug. Do not unplug until the special election date has passed. Thank
do
you.
Not replace with via Democratic means.
Yes. So some interesting political topics going on for once.
Truly, truly. The horse race is actually a little interesting right now.
Two wild stories. Mm-hmm.
What do you think is going to happen in these midterms?
House goes Dem.
Yeah.
That's done.
Despite the gerrymandering and everything.
House goes Dem. Senate's real close because they need four pickups, the Dems. They're going to pick up Alaska. That's a pickup. That's the only one they're getting for sure. North Carolina, right? They're getting that one, I think.
Okay.
I think it's North Carolina. So I think they're picking up two, but they're not going to get Ohio, I don't believe. And they're not going to lose Georgia. So they're not losing anything. They need to pick up four, though. They've got Alaska, North Carolina. They need Texas and... Maine. That's what it comes down to. Mm. Texas and Maine.
Yeah.
And Michigan, if they somehow got Texas and Maine but lost Michigan because Abdul el-Sayed is the candidate, then that would... So there are little ways they could also lose even if somehow they got Texas and Maine. But even just getting Texas and... getting both of those seems not likely to me.
Yeah.
I think they could pull it off in one or the other. Actually, I was pretty confident in Republicans' chances to hold until... Ironically, the scandal made it likely they'd replace Graham Platner with someone more likely to beat Susan Collins. Mm. So now I could see them maybe Collins is going to do better than people think.
Yeah, she always does. She's a consummate survivor.
Yeah. Mm. So I'd like for her to, I've said this before, I'd like for her to win and Ken Paxton to lose. That'd be the most amusing outcome.
Yeah.
But, the other way is maybe more likely. But them getting both seems real unlikely to me.
That would be the most just... punishments.
Yes.
Yeah. I've been
that's the fuck around find out outcome.
Given the 250th anniversary, I've been consuming a lot of American history content, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember, as a little before your time, but the election of 1800, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, during the old electoral system we had.
That one
is
so confusing.
It is very confusing. I might get some of the details wrong here, but basically back in the day, electors got to cast two votes for the president.
One for president,
right?
One for vice president.
Is it one for president,
it's
one for vice
president? One for vice president, yeah.
Okay. Right,
so
right.
You're already
and then
wrong.
So, okay.
No, this one's real hard, guys.
And
podcast listeners,
yeah.
This is a rough, rough one to work out.
Right. And the top vote getter becomes president. The second vote getter becomes vice president, right? But then there was obviously a tie, famously, between Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr, who was his, like, running mate of sorts, even though that didn't really quite exist at the time. And so then, but then the Federalists, it gets thrown to the House of Representatives, where the opposing party, the Federalists, the Hamiltonians, they get to ultimately decide who becomes president. And they hated Jefferson. They saw him as a Jacobin revolutionary who was going to destroy the federal government, right? But they still lined up behind him anyway because they're like, this Aaron Burr just has character issues, right?
Yeah.
He's just a bad guy.
Yeah.
And so we would rather have the bad ideologue than the, pay-to-play urchin.
Is that what happened? I thought actually some Federalists tried to throw it to Burr as an FU to Jefferson. There was a king-making situation a little bit going
on. Well, they considered that, but Hamilton weighed in heavily on the side of Jefferson.
Oh, right. Hamilton told them not to do that.
Right, because he's like...
They wanted to do that.
Yeah, because at the time, this idea of like Republican virtue still mattered a lot in politics. And so it's like, even if I think this guy's
Hamilton
ideas,
behaved honorably in this way and no other, but...
it's just, so it's funny that like that has completely disappeared in our politics.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, because like legislators now aren't really proper legislators. They're just button pushers, right? We just need the partisan vote. And so it doesn't really matter how bad this guy is.
And Burr, I think I recall being happy to convince the for a moment, he thought he was going to overtake Jefferson and just be the president.
Yeah, because of how the system works. I mean, that's because he's a grasper, right? Yeah. But no, that is not how politics works anymore. We are not, we'll prioritize on the margins character over ideology.
Yeah.
Or at least partisanship.
Yeah.
It's partisanship all the way down. But it would be nice to see a, Susan Collins, who's a more upstanding person than Graham Platner, and James Tallarico, despite my many, many problems with him, is a more honorable person, I guess, than Ken Paxton.
1800's a crazy election. I also like, what is it? Is it 1826, somewhere in there? The John Quincy Adams gets thrown to the House. That was somewhere in there where Jackson gets denied.
I believe 1824.
Yeah. Where nobody gets enough electoral votes. So then it goes to the House. You eliminate...
Or maybe it's 1820.
And it's only the top however many vote getters, right? I think it's the top three vote getters. Mm-hmm. And so you eliminated the fourth place person. And then it's each state gets a vote. And it can be, and it's a vote for president and a vote for vice president.
Right.
And it's a majority of the states, but it's just the state gets one vote.
Right. The state delegation's
fun
vote is
system.
One. Yeah.
Fun system.
Quite complicated.
Fun.
Yeah.
And then Henry Clay, then, as Speaker of the House, was in a position to, who was one of the candidates.
Mm-hmm.
But he was eliminated because he didn't get enough electoral votes. Mm-hmm. But he had a lot of power to sway the House delegations to vote however he wanted. That's a fun one.
And then Jackson was...
Jackson is like, I mean, I don't like Jackson at all, but you can understand why Jackson was like, are you kidding me?
Right. Yeah, well, it's an interesting, like, these issues
He was robbed. Royally.
These issues just keep surfacing, right? This tension between we should have, you know, there should be some popular input, but ultimately, like, the adults in the room should deliberate and come up with the candidate we can all live with versus just, like, raw democracy, right? Who's the most popular? They should win. And then all your backroom deals, even if they conform with the rules of the system, are illegitimate, right?
Yes.
That's what we're seeing right now in the main Senate race. And we've definitely shifted much more heavily over the years to being democracy, not smoke-filled rooms, right?
Yeah, which
I'm...
People pick.
Yeah,
The damn people. People be picking.
I'm more of a defender of the primary system than you are, even though it obviously has serious flaws. But look. Did we think politics was good and fine in the 2000s, in the 1990s?
I feel like everyone was less insane.
Everyone was less insane, but we are also, all things considered, insane in our political views, right? Like we want.
There's no one easy fix.
No,
and
there's
at the
not,
end of the day,
not,
it's all politics. It's all ugly.
Yeah,
but
I think the primary system creates more, you know, democratic. Whatever. I don't really care that much about that. But it introduces some good. It's high variability, but I think that variability can have has a positive benefit where it's like it's not just the establishment party hacks picking candidates. We wouldn't have Rand Paul or Thomas Massey to begin with.
That's true.
If we didn't have these primary systems, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. All right. What else is going on? I got a couple potentials.
Do we want to do something fun or do you want to talk about the war?
I don't want to talk about the war at all, but I guess we should. I guess the war's back on.
It's back on.
Does anyone care about this? Trump said, they did shoot at our boats.
They did.
And so Trump said, they're scum, forget it.
Yep.
Deal's off.
Bombing them again.
Know.
Now they're shooting us again.
What's wrong with that? They
shouldn't
have attacked
our
boats.
Well, I guess what's wrong with it is
we had
you started this war in the first place, right? And Iran is just the... Trump started the war, right?
The latest round of the war, yes.
But the beginning of the war.
I mean, everything's been going on for all of human history, so when's to say
when
things begin and
sure.
End?
Okay, that's an interesting take
okay,
on this.
Okay, but then we had a peace deal, and now...
They violated it,
yeah,
and then...
So now... It depends how you start things. I don't care. I don't want to do any of this. I wouldn't have initiated it, but here we are, and we can't just let them shoot at our ships with impunity.
Yeah, no, real situation we got ourselves stuck in,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
They're also the deal they agreed to was a terrible deal.
Well, gave around.
It was no different. It was no different than the deal we had before. Mm-hmm. I thought we were going to get something better than what we already had after we blew them all up.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I guess they want to be blown up some more. So I guess that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. It's like
if I were them, I would not want to be blown up so much. But you know, I don't speak for people in the Middle East. Apparently,
clearly, some faction of the Iranian government doesn't want to be blown up anymore. But then some of them do.
I guess.
Here we are, and all they have to do is fire a few missiles at some ships, and everything collapses.
Okay.
So,
we'll go another round then. I don't know. I want to get off this ride, but
they
don't, and we don't, and our government doesn't. So,
well, let me apologize to you for asking about this military.
I appreciate it. Trump's just he's tired of the negotiations because they're bad. They're not going anywhere. And
he said
if they get a nuclear weapon, I believe they'd use it. So he believes that.
Yeah.
So he thinks it's really important to stop that.
Yeah. Well, then if he believes that, then you shouldn't be trying to like do all these fucking half measures, right?
Well, I think we're running out of half measure time.
Yeah. We'll
half measures be running out.
Yeah.
Okay. That's enough on the war, which I'm sick of. The Middle East is such a drag on all of our, on our government's attention. Mm. Why do our governments keep being like, let's mess around in there. You know, we got, even if you want to be internationally focused, we have a whole continent south of us with dysfunction. That we could rule. We have China problems. Russia's invading a country in Europe. You know, why all the attention has to go to this desert where people hate each other and keep fighting each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then the left and right will say, well, it's because Israel controls us. So it keeps getting focused. And you know, there's a elements of truth to that. And that I've criticized the level of control they have. But I also don't like Israel as the solution for everything.
No, I mean, I think it's just that, like, nothing bad can ever happen to us, right?
If we do that?
Just, yeah.
Nothing good ever comes from being involved there.
No, but again, we're all the way over here. So nothing really bad can happen. So, like, we can fuck around and
we lose a lot of money. It hurts the gas prices. They don't hurt us.
Right.
I mean, we have some terrorist attacks against us.
Yeah, but then the psychos who like really want to be invested, like it's not enough for them, right?
All right.
Yeah. So here we are.
Speaking of Islamic extremists, Abdul El Sayed. Oh, I'm kidding. But he too wants to do total boomer luxury communism.
Oh, the property tax freeze.
Did you see that?
Citizens. Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
This is a fair criticism from Derek Thompson, who I don't always agree with, but he's like, okay. So what the consensus is, there can be no taxes on, working people and low income people because they're poor. There can be no taxes on tips, no taxes on senior citizens because we love our seniors. And then we're not going to tax super wealthy gazillionaire people because they'll just leave the state. So no one can be taxed except the one constituency that just doesn't complain enough, which is, middle class wealthy enough,
mm-hmm.
Gen Z millennial people, mm-hmm. who are like trying to buy houses and start families who have jobs, we can do their income tax sky high.
Yep. And or the one billionaire, right? Yeah, the one billionaire.
The one billionaire, we'll see how much of that bullet he's willing to bite, mm-hmm. before he just moves to Argentina.
Yeah.
Right. We're testing those waters. Or how much before he spends $800 million on my opponent's,
mm-hmm.
campaign.
Yes, this is a great example of our politics getting dumber. I mean, we don't like taxes, right?
Right.
But we also don't like spending, and so that kind of resolves itself because it's like, okay, well, yeah, you don't have to tax the seniors, you don't have to tax anyone, you can just have fewer government provided services.
Right.
Great.
But what's happening is that they're deciding they can only tax you and me.
Right.
We're the losers in this scheme.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're saying they can raise our income taxes forever.
Yeah, which is not true. Like just like mathematically.
That's what Mamdani's solution was.
Mm-hmm.
Raise the income taxes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. And he actually also was like, that was his threat to the state to like, you need to give me money or otherwise I'll go raise the property taxes, you know? Right. Yeah. So the progressive fiction that we've come to is that we're going to have a large, generous welfare state that is funded by a very small collection of high income earners.
Right.
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 The math doesn't work. It's not going to work.
Right. And Republicans will fight that on the highest earners.
Yes. But they're
not just on, they're not, they don't have some, they'll, they fight the corporate income tax rate, mm-hmm. right? There's not a – nobody's fighting to keep your taxes and mine lower.
No.
When our taxes are –
I mean, at the
state
level, state level Republicans are generally going to be pretty hawkish about raising income taxes. That's good. But yeah, just the math does not work, right? Mm-hmm. So you either need to give up some of the spending or you need to – level with your voters and say the welfare state that we're trying to provide right. for you is going to need to be funded by your tax dollars, right?
Right.
And it's remarkable to see Democrats both, they're getting more left-wing, they're getting more in favor of this idea of universal services, right? Why are we means testing child care right. or health care or whatever else? Everyone should get the government-funded services, while at the same time, they are getting more skeptical of broad-based universal taxes.
Right.
Right? And it's just, it's contradictory, and it's not going to work. And the only possible path they have out of this, which still doesn't work, is just to do more socialism, right? It's like, oh, we'll just have price controls and government-owned industry, right?
Right.
That's kind of Mamdani's solution in New York is we don't really have the money to provide everyone with, you know, cheap, affordable housing. We will just force the private landlords through our rent stabilization system to provide it for us, right?
Right.
That actually is also not going to work.
Yeah. They're all going to sell. They're going to get rid of, they're going to not want to be property owners anymore.
Yes. And there's no, like, buildings actually need money to be provided. Yeah, so it's funny. It's like to talk about rent stabilization if we can in New York, because that's something I know a little bit about. But like, you know, the rent freeze is something that Mamdani he got and he was able to engineer. And it doesn't initially require him to spend any money, right? But these buildings are all going to collapse into the ground, right? And so his solution is, oh, we'll just have nonprofits, you know, run the housing instead, and then it'll all work out. That doesn't work either because
they need nonprofits money too.
The nonprofits need subsidies or they need rents from the tenants. And then if you turn the building over to nonprofits, they're not paying property taxes. And so your fiscal situation, which is already dire,
is going to
get worse, right? So it's just like there's no off-ramp here, right? Yeah, Democrats' political economy has become complete nonsense. And I think this is probably influenced by the fact that like budgets at the federal level have been a fiction for so long, right? Like the federal government can do, because it controls the currency, right? Can do a lot of weird things to keep unsustainable deficits going for much longer,
yeah.
right? States and localities actually have to do the math and it just doesn't work.
Doesn't
yeah.
work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Abdul El Sayed said property tax freeze for the seniors, but then if they were to sell that property, then the property tax would go up.
For the
if they were to sell
owner.
It to the new yeah. owner, if the new owner is under 65. So that's, again, that's just a brutally punishing policy for younger people, right?
Well, it is on the property tax side. That actually is an interesting question because the more you cut property taxes, the more the price of the home you would assume goes up, right? Because the costs of owning the home are lower. And so I guess you would have a advantage, or they would have to, the seller, the senior citizen selling to you under 65 would have to cut something meaningful off the price mm-hmm. given the property tax situation, but clearly they would just sell to another senior citizen then, so
right.
they would be less likely to
right.
they would discriminate in
or even
sell
if,
to
if you want to give your house to your you wouldn't sell your house to your kids anymore, you do your kids would just rent your house from you or
right,
something
right sure right yeah
it's going to create a permanent rental class. If there's these people should never give up these homes if the property taxes are going to jump the second they sell them to someone underage.
Yeah.
So then everyone just becomes renters.
And this is kind of a situation that we've seen play out in California, which has capped property taxes for a long time and allows you to basically pass on your reduced property tax rates to your descendants.
Yeah.
I know they've done some reforms to it.
I want to take on the idea that the senior citizen is the one who needs the some kind of lessening of the property taxes versus the younger person is the idea that needs to be confronted, that mm-hmm. is not true,
mm-hmm.
that senior citizens are like uniquely poor or something, which is
yeah.
why we want to go a little easy on them with the property taxes. It's exactly the reverse.
Yeah.
The senior citizens have had their entire life
to accumulate wealth,
accumulate massive amounts of wealth. And then
also the primary beneficiaries
of the welfare state.
Yeah.
Again,
mm-hmm.
in a previous era, before we had Social Security and what Medicare does, then they needed that wealth in retirement to provide for their livelihoods and to provide for their considerable medical expenses. So it So you would understand that. Now we took that duty away from, we provide from them, but then we're also not asking them to spend any of that wealth on the basic welfare infrastructure that is mostly to benefit them is a policy that just makes absolutely no sense. None at all.
Okay, so I have a slight, I'll give some slight, ever so slight pushback to this idea. I don't like, look, in the hierarchy of taxes, right? Mm-hmm. Property taxes are the most efficient in that they cost you the least amount of economic growth for like dollar public revenue, mm-hmm. right? So that makes them, if you're gonna raise revenue, property taxes are a pretty good way to do it. Secondly, there is an element, there's a fuzzy element of user fees to property taxes, right? I pay my property taxes to most property tax revenue goes to the local government, right? Yeah. Which then is also the government that provides the most, like what we might think of as services, right? They run the parks and the schools, whatever,
fire,
right?
Yeah.
Sure. If you want to look at property taxes as a user fee, which is the best way to look at them, it makes sense that senior citizens would pay some modicum less of property taxes because they're not sending their kids to public schools, right? But most states, I don't know what the case is in Michigan, but most states normally separate out their property taxes. Like, here's the school levy, here's the parks levy, whatever else, right? And obviously, this Senate candidate is not engaging in any of this analysis. It's just, what can we give the piggies, you know? Yeah. Eat it up.
Yeah.
Property tax freeze. Yeah. Government that doesn't cost anyone anything. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, he's up against, speaking of Michigan accents, he's up against this Haley Stevens person. I was listening to her speak in the debate last night, and man, does she sound like she's from the state of Michigan.
Oh, boy. What's she say?
Familiar.
What's your Michiganism? Housing? Yeah.
Is that what they say?
That's what you say.
Housing?
Yeah.
What am I supposed to say? Housing?
Housing, yeah.
Like a...
A normal person, an American.
Housing.
You know? Housing.
Housing.
Yeah.
We really flatten our A's. Flatten our A's. That's the Michigan giveaway.
As a military brat, citizen of nowhere, I just have like the most basic bitch American accent. So
yeah, you're hard to figure out.
Yeah, I always do the, you ever do the like New York Times accent quiz?
Best quiz ever, and it pinpoints me to the street I grew up on.
Damn.
Yeah, it has me dead to rights. And I know what question does it. There's a question on that exam. Everybody watching should take it. It's so fun. Just Google New York Times, where are you from language quiz. It asks you like 20 questions about, would you call it, do you call it an expressway or a highway? Those kinds of questions. Mm-hmm, and at the end, it tells you what street you grew up on. The one it gets me for, we idiosyncratically call the night before Halloween Devil's Night.
Oh, okay.
Which is, I guess, not something super common.
Yeah, I had never heard of that.
Yeah. Detroit area.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go.
You, but it can't figure you out?
It's very, it's like, oh, you grew up somewhere in the West, probably, which is true, because I lack any of the like East Coast regionalisms or, you know, Southern regionalisms. Although I do have a couple of those because my mom is from Kentucky, right? But yeah, it's like, oh, you're somewhere west of the Mississippi, but I don't really know where.
I think when I took that quiz, not only did it know exactly that I was from the suburbs of Detroit, but like the other like slightly red spot on the map was Phoenix, Arizona, where I also have some family. It was pretty exact.
It's pretty
cool.
Incredible.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
The accent quiz knows you missed your period before you did.
Getting on to fun subjects. Let's have a little bit of fun here. I was seeing something on social media about Netflix execs complaining that their people sticking with shows is down like massively.
Just a lot of attrition, yeah.
And I had a response that was doing pretty well. So
what was your response? Yeah.
You know,
give me your
take. I could help Netflix out. When you come out with a show, you should have the second season of the show the following year, not 3.5 years in the future when everyone's forgotten what was going on in the show and has moved on to a bunch of new things.
Interesting.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And you know, back in the day, that used to be how it was.
Yeah, right.
We're rewatching, he's watching it for the first time. I'm rewatching it for about the 50 billionth time, Lost, my favorite television show of all time. Time to bring the significant other through Lost. You can't be my person unless you're well up to date on Lost. So we're going through it. It's so bingeable, so great. We watched the first season in like 4 days. You just finish an episode, you're like, next one. You can't look away. It has its flaws, but is so, you can't stop watching it, especially in its first couple seasons. But this show, ABC, made 20 to 25 episodes of this show 3 years in a row,
yeah.
Then was going to make another 20, but there was a writer's strike, so they came out with like 12 episodes that year.
Yeah.
Then followed it up next year, 18 more episodes, next year, 18 more episodes, done.
Yeah.
But that's like 120 episodes of television in mm-hmm. 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Game of Thrones made 10, expensive show, lots of impressive background, you know, shooting on location, tons of characters, elaborate storytelling, fantasy elements.
I've seen it.
10 episodes every year, 6 years in a row.
Yeah.
And great, consistently great through that time period. Then took its time, came out with another 8 episodes, not as good. Took even longer, final 6 episode, sucked. Maybe there's a lesson there. Maybe having to actually deliver on time and sustains interest that way. Because Game of Thrones was a phenomenon through the whole run, but we hated it at the end. House of the Dragon, it's been what, 2 or 3 years since the last season? Stranger Things had like huge gaps between the seasons. Things on Netflix have huge gaps between the seasons. I really like that Wednesday show, but I had to wait a long time for the second season of that. I have no idea when the third season's coming. People lose interest. There's too much to go on.
Yeah, they're doing everything to create attrition here, right? Because inconsistent, long times between seasons,
yes.
And then also each season moves very slowly with a lot of plot bloat,
and also just 5 episodes,
which is so it's less interesting. There's less of a run, and then also the plots, because they're so slow and bloated, just get very complicated, right?
And so it's like you're watching a movie.
Yeah,
it's becoming more like, I mean, Stranger Things, I gave up the final season of it because I couldn't. It was so bad I couldn't stand it for 5 seconds. But yeah, it's like it was like the episode. There was like 6 episodes or something, and each one is a movie length. It's just, it doesn't have the rhythm of TV anymore,
no.
Where you tune in
mm-hmm.
Next week, you watch the next one. I kind of miss filler episodes every now and then, where you spot like some different character or something unusual, or just you learn something else about the world. Not every
Monster of the Week, right?
Yeah. Remember exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I remember thinking this while, I'm a big Marvel person, and I liked the Loki television show on Disney Plus. I love Loki. But that was that whole 2 seasons of that. It was 12 episodes or something put together. And it had a really intriguing premise of him. Now he's working with the time variant people to solve like little time puzzle. You know, he's violated the rules of the universe too many times, and he's on trial for like using the time the Infinity Stones to screw with the way things are supposed to happen.
Mm.
So he's like, his sentence is to help the time police like basically solve interdimensional heist type things, which is a cool premise.
Mm-hmm.
But then they advance the plot immediately. Then it escalates to a Marvel type villain thing. I would have done a couple episodes where they
just
find out who, you know, stole the London Bridge or whatever it is. You know, like where in the world is Carmen Sandiego type adventure.
Right.
And but because it's a Disney Plus show where they just make a small number of episodes of this thing and you move on to the next thing.
Yeah. But what we've lost is that TV and films are separate mediums.
Yes.
That have their own structures,
yes.
And their own tropes and requirements, right? And so you have, TV shows now, I think because of the influence of some of these prestige dramas that we've talked about,
mm-hmm.
Everyone is trying to ape half cinema, half TV.
Yeah.
And so it just, you know, because a film is great because it's 2 hours, right? 2.5 hours,
sure.
Right? But you can deal with some bigger issues, or you have television where it's episodic, right?
Yes.
40 minutes. But it's, everything's kind of wrapped up right at the end.
Yes.
Right. Now we're in some weird middle ground where it just doesn't quite work.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, my go-to is, Next Generation, Star
mm-hmm.
Trek, right? Where, yeah, you, each season
Monster
is,
of the Week.
Yes. With some overarching,
yes.
Plot theme.
And the season has a theme.
Yes, the season has a theme. Right, yeah.
Yes.
But it's not like you need to have watched the past episode in order to understand
right.
this one. Those, you know, the arcs kind of come into play sporadically, right, throughout the season. And there's a lot of television, you know?
Yes.
40 minutes, right? So I don't really understand what the production holdup is. I mean, I guess it's just like if you try to make the 8 hours of television all one big, long, continuous story, that's maybe harder to do and takes more time. I guess it's kind of like, so like we both write newsletters, right? Which are like, you know, they can be, you know, like my newsletter can get up to like 2,800 words, right? But I'll write it in a couple of days. But that's because it's a couple discrete stories, mm-hmm. right? But then if you try to write a 2,800 word feature in a couple of days, well, then you're going to have a bad time, yeah. right? Because they're just like something that's a cohesive whole that's of that length takes a lot longer to put together than something of that length that's discrete bits, right? And so I guess that's where they're at, but it still doesn't make sense to me.
I don't know.
It still doesn't make sense to me why the production times take so long.
Are they just spending too much money in the wrong places? Like I don't need insane special effects or like epic battle type for everything. Just get an intriguing premise, get some good characters, marinate in that universe a little bit. Yeah. Like, not to go back to Lost again, but it was a very expensive pilot to make because it had a huge number of characters and they shot on location in Hawaii. But beyond that, it didn't go crazy on special effects for the most part. And it was just each episode is about a character and it's going to have flashbacks to how they got on the island or what they were doing before the plane crashed or something about their life. And then the events on the island in that episode are going to be thematically relevant. That character is going to be especially spotlighted and the things happening will have some thematic relevance to the specific flashbacks that character is having. Mm-hmm. And then it's telling a season long and a series long story, but the episode has its own conflict. Like mm-hmm. this episode, they're out of water. They have to look for water. We're having flashbacks to Jack's struggles with his father, who's an alcoholic, and he's can't find his coffin on the island. And it all ties together, and you think about the resonance of the themes, and then you wait for next week, yeah. or you binge on to the next one immediately. Like that was so good.
Okay,
they don't do that as much.
So here's the theory for you.
Yeah,
it's just there's so much more television now,
yes,
that you have more people with less steady hands making television and episodes, right? Because like back when you had just you know, the networks and HBO, the people who are making shows for that, it's a small elite of very competent writers, right, and showrunners. And then now when
you're talking primary voters versus smoke-filled rooms.
Maybe that's it. I think we pushed out the production possibilities frontier for television. And so that means that the marginal show gets made and the marginal show is by definition going to be worse.
I don't know. I hate waiting so long. I just wrapped up Pluribus, mm-hmm. which was great. One of the best shows I've seen in recent years.
Yeah, I've heard really good things.
I was in like holy shit mode the entire time.
Okay,
it was nice. So good. It blew me away. It was so good. But I don't know when there'll be another season of that.
Mm.
I don't know when. Are they making another season of that Three Body Problem show on Netflix?
Yeah, they're debating it.
Okay, it's been like 18,000 years since the last season. I don't know. It's a problem.
You know what?
That you're losing me, guys, if you're doing it this way.
You know what my frustration has been? But this isn't necessarily a problem of like Netflix studios. It's a problem of international release dates. But you ever watch the show Babylon Berlin?
No.
Excellent. It's a murder mystery set in Weimar, Germany. It's a German show, right? I watched the first three seasons and they're awesome. Great. I love this show, right? Because, I mean, Weimar, Germany is just such an interesting time and place. You know, there's the Nazis and the communists weird Freudians and the disturbing modernist art and everyone's poor and suffering from inflation and the depression. It's awesome.
Zeppelins.
Right? Yeah. Oh. Zeppelins. Sounds like something Jack Donaghy would say. Zeppelins, lemon Zeppelins. But there, for a long time, there's been a fourth season out there that has only been like released in Germany, right? And it wasn't on any streaming services. And so I was literally considering like buying a DVD player and buying like the German DVDs with English subtitles in order to watch it. It has now been released, but it's on some bizarre additional streaming service I would have to sign up for only to watch this show. But I might end up actually just doing that. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
A couple of things I wanted to mention. I was going to mention, what was the thing on here? Oh, we were going to talk about, you ragged on me for saying that I only listen to things on audiobooks. That counts as reading. You disagree? Does it count as reading? If it doesn't, I don't ever read.
Okay.
I don't have time to read a physical. I go on a vacation where there's a beach or a pool. I like to have a physical because I don't like to bring electronics near water. My husband is always like, he's inseparable from his phone, even if he's in like the pool. It makes me nervous. So I would like to have an actual physical book. When I was in Sicily last year, right? I read Circe's great book, physical book. And I read in The Place It Takes Place, Sicily, which was cool.
Nice.
Other than that, I'm always listening on audio.
Okay, so here would be my two arguments against audiobooks. I'm not fully against them. Just for my own sake, I don't listen to a lot of audiobooks, right? For two reasons. One is because I find it more difficult to pay attention, right? If I'm just listening to something. I'll zone out.
I just go back. I had 30 seconds back if I realize I spaced out.
Yeah, but I would rather just read. And then secondly, I think actually reading, there's something aesthetic about it, of just like sitting there quietly focusing on something. No additional media, no sound. It's just you and the page. I think that's... maybe this is just foolish romance, but I think that's a deeper way of engaging with the text, meditating on what the text has to say to you. Yeah.
You miss the voice actor performances, though, for some of the things I've listened to.
But I don't like
that. So good.
I don't like that. I mean, some
and
audio
I hear
readers...
their line delivery in my head. The one I have when I listen to Blood Meridian, which you and me and Cody have discussed a couple times. The person they had doing the voice for the judge was just perfect, and I hear, when I reflect on that book, I hear his voice in my head, and it's eerie.
No, but see, this is maybe one of
you
my.
You use your own voice.
Yeah, exactly.
You are the judge.
I don't want someone.
You're the vicious.
There's something very personal about reading a book, because it's like this only comes alive in my own head, right? Once you start importing voices. It's a similar phenomenon to you've read the book and then you go see the movie.
And it doesn't look the way you
want. It doesn't look the way I imagined it.
There is something to be said for, right, having imagined things a certain way. And then, you know, you see, then eventually the movie you see of it, like Harry Potter is a great example, right? I didn't picture some of those characters necessarily look that way or the castle to look that way. And now those movies, which are very good, now when I think of Dumbledore, I see Dumbledore as he is in the movies, not how he was in my head. And
right,
so
exactly.
And so
you know, so one of the great things about reading a book is that, again, it relies on your own imagination. It's something in which you, the consumer of the media, are doing a lot of the direction yourself, right? But the more you outsource elements of that production to voice actors and actors and filmographers or whatever else, it's a little more passive, right? You become more passive and... you are adding yourself less to the work, right? That being said,
I get you.
That being said, like if you listen, like I know a lot of people who are very busy. You yourself are one of them who nevertheless manage to put down a lot of books because you're listening to them.
Some of us have some work to do.
Yeah.
So you know,
no, I got nothing
going
on.
Can't just be reading and daydreaming all day long.
I got nothing going on. So it's either reading a book or imagining how I would stop a mass shooting. So.
Yeah. Start or do a mass shooting or
stop.
Oh,
I would
okay.
Say, yeah.
Are you going to stop me?
You know, I
just don't come to the school.
Let your free play.
I was going to mention also. So we can put this up on screen. You'll have to look at it on my computer. The Costanza look.
Oh yes, I'm very familiar with this. Yeah,
how they all look. The cast of Seinfeld with like haircuts from now. They all look. Well, challenge me if you disagree. They all look so much better.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
they look 1,000% better. Particularly
George
Costanza, who if he had just, you know, is balding and looks so old, and if he just shaved his head completely,
grew a little bit of a,
he would look so much better and younger. And but then they've also put, you know, these haircuts on the rest of them. They look better too.
The one I liked was a hipster Elaine.
Yes.
She's
drinking
Zoe
PBR. Deschanel.
Yeah. Which is very sexy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's funny because like even, you know, long before this, you watch Seinfeld, like, they look and dress like complete goofballs, right? Yeah. I'm sure people in the 90s must have felt that way too. Like, Jerry Seinfeld is wearing like shirts that are too big tucked into his jeans. Yeah, right?
A lot.
George dresses like a child.
Professional women wear these giant shoulder pad suits and have, you know, this is like 80s and 90s, I guess. Early 90s.
Big
like,
hair.
My mom used to kind of dress like this when I was like really, really little.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, gigantic hair that's been like, what is it, ironed or blow-dried or something?
You're the one with the can of hairspray on your desk, you tell me.
I don't know what you have to do with it to get that height of the hair. It looks like it's attacking you.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so, it looks so dated now.
Yeah.
And so weird.
Mm-hmm.
And bad.
Yeah.
But it makes you look old, I get. Like, now...
People look younger because they're a little more stylish.
Right, but that was the style then.
Yeah.
That was the style then, so mm-hmm. I just don't... And these things are cyclical, right? I mean, we don't wear... Even something... You know, skinny jeans used to be really, really in, and now I think if you... I don't really wear jeans at all, but... Because I think I would look childish if I wore them, or I would just look out of style or something. I don't know, but they were really in for a while, so things change, but man, that particular look, I can't imagine that ever coming back.
There was a...
Giant shoulder pads, big hair... The women look particularly ridiculous.
Fashion's, like, the extravagance of fashion waxes and wanes, right?
I mean, we're known as big trendsetters, you and I.
Yeah, right.
They're copying us.
And so, yeah, this is what the Lindy Man on Twitter talks about is refinement culture, where, like, everything is just a little, whether it's logos or store environments or clothing, everything is kind of downplayed, right? I think things are getting a little more extravagant. We're starting to get a little more color and a little bit more
color back. Color's coming back.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
I hate that that one Twitter account that's the suits fashion guy, work, die, wear, whatever.
Yeah.
Who's always doing dunking on Republicans or people he doesn't like for
He's relentlessly partisan in a way that's very irritating.
Relentless partisan. And what is so annoying about him is he will take non-traditional forms of fashion that are different cultures or whatever, that are featuring racially diverse, gender diverse, sexuality diverse, you know, expressions of femininity if you're a man and masculinity if you're, and say how beautiful that is and how it's fine to be different and it's And then he will just take a Republican in a suit that's slightly too small for the person and say, well, that's just wrong.
Right.
But why is it – difference is to be celebrated, according to you, in all other cases.
Except for this.
Except for this. There's one exact right way to wear a suit, which, by the way, is not a way that I think looks that good.
Yeah.
He's – people like – men – this is not specifically Republican men, but this is true of a lot of Republican men. But men in general put more work into their bodies now to be like muscular, to be jacked looking, and want that to come through even when they're wearing suits. So everybody wears somewhat tighter suits than they used to so that you know they have muscles. And you can definitely take that to an extreme where it looks ridiculous, and I've seen examples where it looks ridiculous, but sorry, we just wear tighter suits now. We don't wear baggier, like he loves the flow and the whatever it is, I don't know. That looks weird to me. That's not how people dress now. And he understands that in the context of every other fashion thing.
But not.
But with this, he's like, no, there are rules. They're being violated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Screw you, dude.
Yeah, he's kind of a prick.
Yeah.
So, like you. I don't know. I've never been a big fashion aficionado.
Neither am I.
I know that's surprising for you to hear. But
neither am I. And people compliment me often or say that they like my sense of fashion. I have no sense of fashion whatsoever. I am clueless. If I look presentable, it's because I have relied on the advice of other homosexuals and have just followed it to the best of my ability. I don't know what matches what or what looks good with I run it by other people. I don't know. I just don't know.
My appraisal of how good a shirt looks is whether I like the band on it.
There we go. Yeah. Spoken like a true dude. We're glad to hear it. All right, we'll leave it there for today.
Okay.
See you guys next week.